97.5, The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show. Couple open phone lines right now, 610-632-0975. Connor Thomas doing a great job behind the glass. Talking about our time capsule. We talked about this. I threw this question out. If this thing goes on for a long time, you can go short and you can go long term. If you could put one play, one moment, one instance of sports in your long history of enjoying sports and being a sports fan, what would it be? Mine would be Villanova in 2016. Chris Jenkins shot to win the whole thing. I know Connor Thomas in the short term had Bryce Harper's grand slam against Chicago earlier in the year when they wore the baby blues. And Connor, I'm going to throw it to you again for your long-term capsule. What do you got?
Yeah, so the long-term isn't really, it's a sports surrounding moment, but it wasn't during, well, it was during a game, but it wasn't a play or anything like that. So I was in person at the Eagles NFC Championship game win over Minnesota back in 17 during that ridiculous run, obviously, that ended in a Super Bowl. But there was a moment in the fourth quarter of that game where you already knew the game was on ice because they were up by so much. And I believe Tom Petty had just passed away. And they're playing Won't Back Down over the PA speakers. Everyone in the crowd's just singing it. And for me, it's always almost been the moment before you actually win a championship. It's that moment right before the lead up to it is almost more powerful. So being in the link, sold out, packed, everyone's singing this song and just knowing that we're about to go play for a Super Bowl, and you could already feel how special the team was. That moment right there, I've never been able to track down a video of it. I've never been able to find any instance of it on social media, but that moment of just singing with everyone in the link, singing Won't Back Down, the emotions behind it with Tom Petty passing, plus the game and everything on top of it was just, it gives me chills thinking about it, and if that's something I could relive every day, I'd love to.
That's incredibly unique. I never thought you'd come up with that, and I have to say, I am half moron. People know that. I didn't know Tom Petty died. Where the hell was I? I was here during that game because I was doing post-game till 5 in the morning, but I didn't know that. Maybe I did, and I forgot. Tom Petty passed away. How'd he die?
I'll have to look that up. I don't remember exactly, but yeah.
What a dope. See, I'm so behind on like social things other than sports. Let me talk a little bit about Howie Roseman, because I talked about his draft prowess and some of the things he's done in free agency already. We don't have to go over it again. Well, I can briefly talk about what he's done so far. He's done some things that were just eh. But the splashes he made, at least this free agency period that has just passed or is still going on, he brought in nose tackle Javon Hargrave from Pittsburgh to play alongside Fletcher Cox, 3 years, $39 million, 26 guaranteed. He also made a trade with Detroit for a third and a fifth round pick this year for cornerback Darius Slay. He gave him a 33-year, $50 million extension, $30 million guaranteed. So they have at least one cornerback. They're moving Jalen Mills to safety. Other than that, Nate Sudfeld, one-year deal. They brought a linebacker in from San Diego on a one-year deal. They brought a local kid in, a safety from the Broncos named Will Parks. Rodney McLeod, they signed to a two-year deal for $12 million. Didn't do a whole lot. They let Jordan Howard walk. He went to Miami. Big V is now in Detroit and a very wealthy man. Malcolm Jenkins, they couldn't agree to a deal, so he's with the Saints now. Nigel Bradham was released. Their best linebacker, Nelson Aguilar, is with Vegas. Corey Clement has been unsigned, and Jason Peters still doesn't have a home yet. But, you know, everyone talks about how poor his drafting is, and I'll be the first to tell you that, and I talked about it earlier in the show. I went over his picks since 2010, sans 2015 when Chip Kelly was the GM. Let's talk about his free agency, shall we? Because I think people still want to hang on to 2017 and say, wow, he's great at that at least. At least he's great at that. Is he? 2010, defensive back Marlon Jackson ruptured his Achilles, so he gets an incomplete there. Running back Mike Bell he brought in, played 5 games, 28 yards, 16 carries, gets an F for that. In 2011, the dream team, if you remember, coming from the lips of Vince Young, Nnamdi Asamoah gets an F. Jason Babin had 18 sacks. I'll give him a C for that. Tight end Donald Lee, F. Quarterback Vince Young, F. Offensive lineman Evan Mathis, I'll give him an A for that. He was great here. Running back Ronnie Brown, D minus. Jared Page, safety, F. Steve Smith, not the good Steve Smith, the one from USC that played for the Giants, F. 2012, Demetrius Ben, he gets an F. 2013, tight end James Casey gets an F. Patrick Chung can play for Belichick, can't play here. He gets a D for that. Bradley Fletcher, he brought in to be a cornerback. He gets a C for that. Jason Phillips, linebacker, tore his ACL. He gets an incomplete for that. Isaac Sopoaga, offensive lineman, he gets a D. Connor Barwin, he gets an A. Kenny Phillips was hurt. My boy from Miami gets an incomplete there. Corey Williams on the other side of Bradley Fletcher gets a C. They were both average cornerbacks. And Donnie Jones, the punter, I thought was the best player on the team in 2013, gets an A for that. 2014, all right. Malcolm Jenkins, at least he will go down in history as having signed one of the greatest free agents in the history of the Philadelphia Eagles, and that would be Malcolm Jenkins. Gets an A++++++++ for that. Now, wasn't able to keep him. Probably could have kept him for two more years. The heart and soul of the team, wanted a little bit more money, which would have been retroactive, not for what you're going to do, because he's on the downside of his career. And I know teams don't like to play for what you've done, but what you're going to do. So anyway, Chris Maragos gets a B. Brian Braman, the linebacker, gets a C. Nolan Carroll, cornerback, C minus. Mark Sanchez, he brought in, C plus. Now let's go to 2017. The offseason of 2017. Nick Foles. A plus. You can't put enough pluses next to Nick Foles. His A. Stefan Wisniewski. I'll give him good grades for that. Give him a B plus for that. Chris Long. B plus. Torrey Smith. C plus. Patrick Robinson. B plus. Tim Jernigan, I know he was banged up, so I'll give him an incomplete. LeGarrette Blount, A minus. Corey Graham, B. Ron Darby, B minus. Jay Ajayi, B plus. He was phenomenal in the 2017 season. And it's a good thing because his drafting in 2017, he selected Derek Barnett at 14, who, in my opinion, he's not quite a bust, but he's close. Sidney Jones, second round, bust. Rasul Douglas, they're shopping him around, according to Mike Florio. He's been okay. Mac Hollins, bust. Donnell Pumphrey, bust. Shelton Gibson, bust. Nathan Gary, he's been okay. And Elijah Qualls, please, stop. His drafting was terrible. His free agent signing and some of his trades were remarkable. So then we go to the following year. We go to 2018. Do I have that? Do I have 2018 in front of me? 2018. Yes, as a matter of fact, I do, because I am prepared. Richard Rodgers, tight end. All right, B minus. Fine. He did what he did. No big risk there. Paul Warlow, linebacker. Give him a B. Guess he was okay. Mike Wallace, wide receiver, hardly played because he was hurt, gets an incomplete. Nigel Bradham, I thought he gets an A- for Nigel Bradham. Corey Nelson, linebacker, D. Haloti Ngata, thought he played okay. Give him a C-. And then we go to 2019. So nothing special in 2018. We go to 2019. Did I mention Paul Warlow? He was 2019, actually. Malik Jackson got hurt. Give him an incomplete. DeSean Jackson played one game. He gets an A for that game. He played five plays against Chicago. He really gets an incomplete. They brought back Vinnie Curry, C-. Zach Brown, they got rid of. Blake Countess, stop. Orlando Scandrick, please. Cody Kessler, stop. Jonathan Cyprian, Charles Johnson, Andrew Zendejo, LJ Fort, Jernigan again hurt. Darby hurt again. So that was what he did in 2019. I just mentioned what he did so far in this free agency. I personally don't think they're as good as they were when it started, but it's incomplete. There's still some to go. There's still a few free agents out there, but they need to have a strong draft and make some trades possibly, because this team has certainly some holes in it. All right, let's go to my man from the Philadelphia Inquirer on the Comcast Business Hotline, as promised, Beyond Fast. He's the great Marcus Hayes. How are you, Marcus?
Man, how in the world do you rate DeSean Jackson anything but a complete catastrophe?
Well, he played one game. He's an incomplete.
No, not an incomplete. This is one. He signed a 2-year contract. He played one game in the first year of the contract.
That's catastrophic. That's fine. I'll give you that. That's fine. I'm just saying
he's the worst signing he's ever made.
But he didn't play poorly. He got hurt. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
But he only played like 13 games a year before that. You knew he was it was a huge risk. It was a huge gamble, and it was catastrophic to the entire season.
Doug Peterson only thought he was going to play 12. He said that off the record. He said, I think he's going to play
about
12.
Well, he didn't say it on the record. He didn't say it to me.
No, it's unbelievable. So I'll give you that. That's fine.
I mean, but that's my point. It's the worst signing of his career, DeSean Jackson.
Howie Roseman's worst signing? Because he's had some bad signings.
By far.
Really?
By far the worst signing of his career.
What if he has a good
year
this year?
The only caveat to DeSean Jackson, it wasn't the character stuff, it was the injury stuff.
Yeah. Well, what if
he got hurt?
If he has a good year this year, you can't call it the worst signing in history.
Well, why not?
It turned out poorly last year. It turned out poorly.
No. What you rate signings on value for your dollar. There is no way they can recoup that value for that dollar.
Okay.
None.
I'll give you that. It turned out poorly. A lot of the moves turned out poorly. The drafting has been poor. What do you think of what they've done so far, and are they better on paper now, or were they better on paper a few days ago?
I'm fascinated to see how Darius Slay does in this environment without Malcolm Jenkins. This is a leaderless team now. You've taken the offensive leader, Jason Peters, and you let him go ostensibly. We don't expect him to be back. And if he does come back, he's going to be diminished. Because you can't tell the team, we don't need this guy, and then have him come back. So even if he does come back, he comes back with a different profile. And you took the undisputed leader of the team, Malcolm Jenkins, and told him he wasn't worth whatever he wanted, $10 million a year, $12 million a year.
What could they have done to have kept him? Because he got $8 million a year in New Orleans for 4 years and a $9 million signing bonus. It didn't seem like it was that far away that the Eagles could have reached that.
I'm pretty sure he got $16 million guaranteed.
Yes, it is, it is $16 million guaranteed.
Yeah, so that's essentially 2 years at $8 million, or, you know, you believe that he will make, you know, probably $20, $21 million in the first couple of years. I'm not sure. And it's incentive-laden, too. So if New Orleans does well, which they should, then he should probably make more than $8 million a year. The Eagles just weren't interested. They weren't interested in having him pass this season. I don't disagree with that necessarily. His pass coverage skills the last three seasons in a row have diminished. He was no longer a real option for coverage in really any of their packages, because he didn't make plays. I mean, he made tackles once the guy caught the ball, but he didn't make plays. And he didn't make a whole lot of – he wasn't that great to begin with. I mean, he was okay. He was serviceable. He was a safety playing, you know, a cornerback spot, which brings a lot of value. But you can't really count on it, and you could match up against him and put him at a disadvantage. All that said, I don't necessarily disagree with them not extending him at the numbers, you know, we thought he wanted. But his value to the locker room was just, I mean, he led
invaluable.
He led every aspect of the team. He was the player rep.
Yep.
They got to get a new player rep. He was the emissary to both Schwartz and Peterson for the entire locker room, for the entire franchise. I mean, you know, his social justice stuff never interfered with his performance in the locker room or on the team. I mean, think about what a big hero he was when he went after Orlando Skandrick, who was, by the way, a much better signing than DeSean Jackson. Think about how valuable he was to the proletariat when he told Orlando Skandrick to, you know, shut his mouth or stuff it or whatever.
How much do you think that will hurt this team that he's no longer here? Not from an on-the-field standpoint, but like you said, from in the locker room standpoint.
It depends on who steps up. I mean, Rodney McLeod is not a bad guy to lead a team. He's got some baggage, too. He shied away from contact twice in his first season in 2016. But, you know, so did Zach Ertz, and he's been able to reclaim himself. But he's much more talented than Rodney McLeod. I mean, if I'm Fletcher Cox, I have a hard time taking Rodney McLeod seriously. Fletcher Cox, I don't think, is the kind of guy who can represent a team the way that Malcolm Jenkins did, the way that Troy Vincent did, the way that Brian Dawkins did. He's the best player, but I don't know that you can. The answer is I don't know that there's a person on the team who can replace that element of Malcolm Jenkins offensively or defensively. You know, I mean, you're looking at Lane Johnson on the offensive side of the ball because Jason Kelce, how long is he going to be here? And I don't know how committed he is to being the, I don't know, politically correct leader of a team, saying the right things at the right time. And the thing about Malcolm was, and this is kind of an interesting tangent. The thing about Malcolm was when Chip Kelly left town, Malcolm Jenkins didn't like Chip Kelly, but Malcolm Jenkins did not address Chip Kelly leaving town the way that Lane Johnson did, the way that other significant players did,
right,
with more to lose than Malcolm Jenkins. Malcolm Jenkins was a coward in that moment. When Malcolm Jenkins, I think it was a preseason game in Chicago, when he began to protest alongside Colin Kaepernick during the national anthem,
right,
he changed his entire profile. He was there every day he could be there. He was there that night. I actually told Les Bowen when we were working at the Daily News before the two newsrooms merged, I said, you know what, I'll do Malcolm, but you know, that's just because I know he's not going to talk and I can be a do it a column. Doesn't need to be a news story. I'll take it off you. Malcolm Jenkins talked for 20 minutes and he knew what he wanted to say. So since that day, I know that was about, but he talked about everything. He would talk about everything all the time and eloquently. And you didn't always agree with him and he wasn't always pleasant, but he talked about the day Eric Reid accosted him during the coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about that at great length. He was probably his least composed at that moment because he felt betrayed.
Right.
And, you know, you don't get called an Uncle Tom and take it lightly, especially
right, sure,
when you're wearing, African, you know, the tricolor hat, or I can't remember what it's called, but, you know, I understand him being upset in that moment, but he was still very composed. So all that said, I mean, it's really not fair to compare, to answer your question, you know, 4 minutes later, it's not fair to compare probably the most comprehensive leader the Eagles have ever had to anyone else, you know? So, and he's a guy who, to also, to further answer your question, he's a guy who grew into it, who matured into it, you know, as he was maturing into it as a player rep, as a dad, as a husband, as a businessman, all those sorts of things. It was really, really, really interesting to see him sort of emerge and, I think, to find himself as a person amid all of that. It was really interesting. I mean, think about it. He's had two GMs here, one guy,
yeah,
you know, one guy switched to the other guy, switched to the other guy. You know, he went through the Joe Douglas years. He, you know, he's had two defensive coordinators, and both of them are kind of crazy. And, you know, two really eccentric head coaches, won a Super Bowl. I mean, what Malcolm Jenkins went through here is like a career's worth of stuff for anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline from the Philadelphia Inquirer. So they didn't get Byron Jones. They got Darius Slay. Now he's the highest paid corner in the league. They moved Jalen Mills. Apparently they're moving him to safety. One, who plays on the other side of Darius Slay? And did you like the move in acquiring Darius Slay for those two picks?
I don't know. You're going to overpay somebody. and Darius Slay is a better cornerback than Byron Jones. And their contracts expire at the same age, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Darius Slay is 3 years older, 2 years older than Byron Jones?
He's 29.
So the contracts both expire when they're 32, which is kind of the shelf life for, you know, a lockdown corner. Maybe he can play safety in the future. But I haven't really liked or disliked anything they did. I don't think they're a better team now than they were going into free agency, but I don't think they're any worse. But so much depends on, and nobody wants to hear this, them winning the bets that they've made on their own guys. I mean, it just does. Their players have to produce. I mean, I don't know. When you look at how they built, right? They're counting on lots of, take Avante Maddox, for example, who might be the guy that plays opposite Darius Slay, right?
Sure.
He's a fourth round pick in 2018. He's played in 25 games and he started 15 of them. He's been impressive at times, but in your third season, you can't draft a guy in the fourth round and never get production out of him.
Right.
You just can't cut bait. So he's an example. I mean, it sounds as though they've soured on Rasul Douglas. I've heard they're trying to trade him. I don't know anybody who would take him. I hope nobody does take him because I think he's your third safety. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Jim Schwartz doesn't agree with me. Tim Houck, the safeties coach, doesn't agree with me. Everybody else in the NFL I talk to agrees with me. He can't run back. He can't run in pursuit of a receiver, but he can cover, and he's a playmaker. He has good hands. So, to answer your question, a lot of what they will be, and I don't think this is necessarily wrong. I don't think this is a bad idea. A lot of what they will be depends on the maturation of who they have. I mean, Derek Barnett was atrocious. He was one of the five worst starting defensive ends in the league last year.
Yep.
And and his year last year was one of the five worst in the last 2 years. And he was suspended. So he was awful. What if he takes a step forward? You know, what if Malik Jackson moves out to the end for, you know, 10-15% of his plays and gets three sacks out there? You know, there are a lot of moving parts here. There are a lot of, this is a very difficult team to project, number one, because they're not done, and number two, because you just can't, you can't project what young guys are going to do or what they're not going to do. And one thing about this organization the last couple of years is they've been pretty good at identifying talent that isn't like top-tier talent, serviceable talent. You know, they haven't been great at sort of, you know, with Dallas Goedert was probably the exception. The young, you know, kind of stud guys haven't been great immediately. But they've been pretty good at getting value from guys like Avante Maddox. So that's kind of the answer. Are they better? You know, what to expect? It depends on where these guys go. Well, do not, however, bet on DeSean Jackson.
Okay, we're running out of time a little bit, Marcus. I got one more question for you because I think it's an important position that they haven't necessarily addressed unless you consider them signing Nate Sudfeld to a 1 year, $2 million deal. The deal. They can't be going into the season with Nate Sudfeld as their backup, can they? Or do they have to go out and find another veteran, maybe a Joe Flacco?
I thought that their biggest mistake last season was making Josh McCown their number two quarterback. I like Nate Sudfeld. I think he's a talented guy. He's familiar with the offense. He's familiar with his teammates. His hand, I think it was his left hand that he broke last year in the preseason. It wasn't 100% at the end of the season. So maybe that was an issue with the Josh McCown number two role. Maybe they said, okay, Josh McCown at 100% is better than Nate Sudfeld's offhand at 85% or 75%. He was still doing hand exercises in January.
Okay.
So that said, I don't have a problem with Nate Sudfeld being their number two whatsoever. They seem to have soured on him after a couple of, you know, sketchy preseason performances. But I like him. I think he's a valuable guy. And I think they probably need to draft a quarterback. They need to draft a third or fourth round quarterback. I think you should always have a guy in his first, second, or third year in your system, and a real guy, not a pretend. And I know they tried and they failed, but I think they need to replenish that the way they need to replenish the offensive and defensive lines. You know, the first five rounds of the draft, I think every year, every other year with a quarterback, maybe every third year, but every year with your offensive and defensive lines, you have to take somebody to develop. It's just too important or too hard to come by. So I don't have a huge problem with Nate Sudfeld. I thought he should have been the backup quarterback, the number two quarterback, in the second half of last season as soon as he was, you know, available to play. And honestly, I think he'd have done a better job than Josh McCown did in the playoff game.
Okay. Well, we'll never know. We'll see what happens this year. Marcus, I appreciate your time. As always, great stuff. And we'll catch up with you soon, pal. Have a great day.
Take care, Joe.
All right, you too, Marcus. Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline. We're a little behind time, so we've got to take a break. I'll be back. We've got one more half hour to go. We'll talk about what Marcus said, including his indictment on the Deshaun Jackson signing last year. And we'll talk a little bit about that on the other side. I'm Joe Stajak, 97.5 The Fanatic. We're coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back to the show. Joe Stajak in the house. It's 11:30. The Lineham coming up at noon, and she's here till 4 o'clock, I believe. And then Tyler Zuli and Pat Egan and the great combo, the great... Just Tyler Zuli. Oh. Did we fire Pat Egan? Not yet? Okay, he's still here? All right. Well, Pat Egan's still here, ladies and gentlemen, so... No. Just messing. Love Pat Egan. I thought he was on. I thought he was doing a duo. Maybe that's next week with Tyler Zuli. But anyway, Marcus Hayes was just on. He doesn't think the Eagles are better or worse. I think they're a little worse than they were. One thing, I do have to get back to the Deshaun Jackson thing. He says it was catastrophic. It didn't work out. But it wasn't the worst signing in the history of Howie Roseman. I just went over all the terrible signings he's had. At least Deshaun Jackson, he played in three games. I guess they counted the Atlanta game as a game he played in. Maybe he played in one play. He played in like four or five in the Chicago game. He won the Washington game. All right? At least he had an impact on the season. They needed to win nine games last year. They needed to win nine games. He helped win one of them. I get it. It was a disaster. It turned out that it didn't work out. But at least when he did play, he helped them win one game, and that's what they ended up needing to get into the postseason. There were so many worse moves than that. I mean, Malik Jackson played one game and got hurt. I know what Marcus Hayes is saying. He's saying, yeah, but you knew Deshaun Jackson is a hurt risk. He's an injury risk. He is. Even Doug Peterson, I think off the record, maybe I shouldn't be repeating this, but he said he thought he was going to play about 12 games. That's about right. That's what you get with Deshaun Jackson. You get 12 to 13 games. But they're usually productive. They're usually about 17 to 19 yards per catch. A couple of big strikes, which he had in the Washington game. He could still have a very good year this year, and it would be considered a decent signing. So, you know, listen, we disagree. That's fine. It's no great shake. He disagrees. He thinks it's the worst signing in the history of Howie Roseman. I think there are, I can think of about 45 worse signings than Deshaun Jackson last year. At least Deshaun Jackson played. And he actually helped win a game, and they needed that game to get into the postseason. Anyway, he did get hurt. Yes, it was a risk. He came back. I believed he should have gotten surgery instead of just tried to rehab it. Didn't work. Didn't help. He got hurt again in the Chicago game. He was done for the rest of the year. Hopefully he'll come back and return with, hey, I'll take 13 games out of him. I'll take 12 games out of Deshaun. They need help at wideout badly. Alshon's probably not going to be here. Nelson Aguilar's not going to be here. Deshaun will be here. Who else am I missing? I'm trying to think from the Super Bowl team. Torrey Smith, not here anymore. Mike Wallace, he was here for a cup of coffee. He never played. Alshon Jeffrey had a very good Super Bowl, not going to be here. Nelson Aguilar, very good Super Bowl, not going to be here. So they have Deshaun Jackson. And who else? Mac Hollins is not here anymore. I mentioned the wide receivers they've selected over the years, how bad they've been. Let me do that again, just in case you missed the top of the show. Let me reset. Because I talked about how important it was for Howie to have a good draft. And everyone's concerned about that because he's not historically a good drafter. He's not. He'll probably tell you that. Free agency, he's okay. He had a phenomenal free agency in 2017, and it helped them win a Super Bowl because it certainly wasn't because of their drafting. In 2017, they drafted Derek Barnett, bust. Sidney Jones, bust. Rasul Douglas, they're trying to shop. Mac Hollins, bust. Donnell Pumphrey, bust. Shelton Gibson, bust. Nathan Gary, C+. Elijah Qualls, stop. That's who they drafted in 2017 to have an impact on their Super Bowl season. The only thing I can remember about Derek Barnett is he recovered the fumble that Brandon Graham caused when he knocked the ball out of Tom Brady's hands. All right, so great. He happened to be in the right place at the right time. That wasn't a strip sack. That was Brandon Graham's moment. But he did recover the fumble. That's nice. Other than that, to me, he's been a bust. He was the 14th pick overall. He was a bust. It's a shame they had the 14th pick that year because there were some good players in that draft. That was the Mitch Trubisky draft when Chicago gave up 4 picks to move up one spot. I wondered out loud, I don't know if I said this on the air earlier, how does Ryan Pace of Chicago, the GM, have a job? They just brought in Nick Foles. I said the over-under is going to be 3.5 games before Nick Foles starts. I think it's going to be under. They took Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson, over Patrick Mahomes. I know that he needed a quarterback, but there were some other very good players in the top 10. Corey Davis, Marshawn Lattimore was in there. They had some very good players in that top 10 that year. Mitch Trubisky was not one of them. And not only that, they moved up one spot and gave up, I think it was either 3 or 4 draft picks with San Francisco to move up that one spot and take a kid who's played 13 games in college. What are you guys looking at? I could have told you Mitch Trubisky was, he was okay. So I beat Miami. That's my squad. It's one game I watched of him that year. He was fine. Saw him beat Florida State, but that was because the kicker knocked through like a 73-yard field goal at Doak Campbell Stadium with no time left. He was okay. I don't know why everyone fell in love with Mitch Trubisky. Not my problem. I'll take Carson Wentz, despite the fact he doesn't finish the seasons, or hasn't. Because when he does, and when he does start staying healthy, and I hope and pray that he does, he's a flat-out stud. The wide receivers that Howie has taken outside of 2015 when Chip Kelly took over as GM. Here we go. Are you ready? Riley Cooper. Nelson Aguilar, you can't count. Marvin McNutt. Josh Huff. Jordan Matthews. Shelton Gibson. Mac Hollins. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Those are the wide receivers that my man has taken, has drafted. That's why they had to go out and make a move for Alshon Jeffrey, make a move for Deshaun Jackson. Chip Kelly drafted Nelson Aguilar in the first round. They went out and made a move for Torrey Smith. Running backs. Oh, let's do running backs. Charles Scott. Stanley Havili. Deion Lewis turned out to be okay for New England, not here. He got whacked from here. He turned out to be okay in New England. Now he's not even with New England anymore. I forget where he is. Maybe Tennessee. Bryce Brown, seventh round pick, was okay at Tennessee, was touted to be the next Earl Campbell coming out of college, but never was. Yeah, I got a little playing time here, but no. Wendell Smallwood, no. Donnell Pumphrey, bust. Miles Sanders finally hit on an impact player, a stud. A stud. Let's talk about defensive backs, shall we? Since 2010, Kurt Coleman, Trevard Lindley, Nate Allen, Curtis Mars. Stop me, by the way, if you hear someone that sounds like a good player or you remember being a good player. Curtis Marsh, Jaquan Jarrett, second round pick out of Temple, Brandon Boykin, Jordan Poyer, Earl Wolf. Now, these were in 2015. These were Chips guys. Randall Evans, bust. Ja'Cory Shepherd got hurt, never did anything anymore. Eric Rowe, they soured on for some reason, got rid of him. He went to New England. I think he's in Miami now. Jalen Mills, okay, serviceable. Got him in the seventh round. He's probably a seventh round talent or second round talent, but did some things off the field. Okay, he was an okay corner, played well in the Super Bowl. Moving him to safety now. Take over from Malcolm Jenkins. Blake Countess, Rasul Douglas, who they're shopping and has probably been playing out of position at corner. He's got good hands. He's a ball hawk. Can cover back there in a safety position. Should probably be playing back there, at least as the third safety. Sidney Jones, incredible bust. Avante Maddox can play a little bit, but really? Now, first round picks since 2010. First round picks. They moved up to take Brandon Graham. Now, that might have been Andy Reid. I mean, technically, Howie was the GM, but Andy Reid, I think, liked Brandon Graham. He turned out to be okay. To me, he's okay. He's a B player. Danny Watkins is now probably back to putting out fires. Fletcher Cox, stud. I still think a little overrated, but stud. Lane Johnson, stud. Marcus Smith, bust. Nelson Aguilar, like I mentioned, that was a Chip Kelly guy. Carson Wentz, despite the fact he gets hurt all the time, stud. Derek Barnett, bust. Andre Dillard, remains to be seen. So of the 36 guys I went over who Howie drafted since 2010, 36 guys, and I just went over the first-round guys, the wide receivers, the running backs, and the defensive backs from 2010 minus 2015 of 36 selections. Four studs. That's one every nine picks. You should be able to pick, select impact players at about a 40 to 50% clip. One out of nine. Got to take another break. Dylan McKinnon in the house, getting ready to produce, I guess, D. Lineham coming up next at 12 o'clock. Can't wait to hear what she has to say. I know she's bumming. Without any hoop, I'm bumming without March Madness and my hockey playoffs and my basketball and all kinds of good stuff. I don't think it's coming back, to be honest. I am hoping at this point that at least the football season will start on time. We shall see. We will not know for a little while. 11:41 here at 97.5 The Fanatic. I'm Joe Stasiak, coming back for one more break.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. I said I'm coming back for one more break. I meant one more segment. It is fourth quarter time. Fourth quarter. Get those four fingers up. Fourth quarter belongs to us. We are wrapping it up. D-Line, I'm coming up at 12 o'clock. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeStasiak975. If you missed today's show, you can go to the website, go to podcasts, go to weekends, and you can find our shows hour by hour. We had Steve Callis on today at 10:10. Had his son on, actually, afterwards, talking about the Patriots and the Brady move and all that good stuff. Then we had Marcus Hayes on at 11:10 from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'm going to read some tweets now. We have, because I've been talking about Howie Roseman and how sketchy his moves have been as GM. 76ers One says Roseman has been overrated as a GM. He's lived off of 2017. However, some of his earlier drafts and free agents, the coaches had a hand in drafting. I can't fully blame him. However, the human trade bait, Nick Foles, he spells it Nick Goals, I think he means Nick Foles, came in and helped this franchise win a title. He's absolutely right about that. Jasper Lucas at Jay Gridlock says, not ready to give up on Sidney Jones just yet. It's taken him 2 years to come back from what is a catastrophic injury for a cornerback. He showed some flashes of being the player he was before the injury last year. Yeah, a couple. I need to see more out of Sidney Jones. To me, that's a one-year injury, and I just haven't seen it. He was known for his speed. I'm still miffed that they would let him go out and perform on his pro day. He was already a top 10 pick. How much further up, you know, the ladder are you going to move? If you're a top 5 guy, he was a top 10, maybe a top 5 guy. How much further up are you going to move? I would never, ever perform at a pro day or for scouts. You have tape. Guys, put in the tape. Watch me on Saturdays. If you haven't watched me, not my fault. Go get a tape from somebody else. I'm not going to run around here and risk my knee or my Achilles or, you know, for you knuckleheads.
So how do you feel about players sitting out like bowls?
I'm okay with it. I would, from a selfish standpoint, rather see them play. Absolutely. I hate it. But I get it. I mean, I totally get it. You know, why risk it?
Yeah, but it's like the team aspect, at least for bowls. I get the pro day argument, but like hanging out your team, you may have guys you played with for 4 years on that team.
I agree. It's a tough call, but I get it because if you're risking possibly you can make, if you're a decent player, you can make over your career like $300 million, and you risk that by playing in a game that's not going to matter, really. If it's the national title game, then I'd have to say, I want to see you on the field, son. You've been my teammate for 4 years. You better get your ass out there. Other than that, I get it. I don't like it, but I understand it. And I wouldn't send them out. If I was an agent, I'd say, no. Go interview people. Go talk to people. Be charming. Be charismatic. You know, be like me. Do your thing. But no, don't throw a pass, don't run a route, don't make a cut. If you've had a great career and you're a top 10 guy, if you're a fringe guy that, you know, you've played some good games, you've played some sketchy games, people really want to see your athletic ability and you can show it off, okay, I'm fine with it. But if you're already up there in the top 10, how much further up are you going to go? You know what I'm saying? Do you agree with that, Connor? No, don't agree.
Yeah, that's a fair point. No, I totally agree. Yeah, I was thinking along the lines of those fringe guys, too, and you brought it up on your own. But those top guys, the differences in money, and everyone talks about like the differences in slotted signing bonus and things like that. In the grand scheme of things, it's so much money. Why would you give that up and turn into a Sidney Jones and turn into a bust because of trying to push maybe 2 picks higher?
But right. It's like 2 picks higher. They're trying to go just a little higher. You're okay, man. You're going to get your cash. You're going to get cashed up. I know you probably have an insurance policy with Lloyd's of London. That's fine. It's still not going to be what you're going to make, you know, especially, okay, you're not going to make a ton as a rookie, but once that contract's up and you've made it in the league, you're going to get paid. You are going to get paid. Mitch in East Windsor, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Mitch?
How you doing, Joe? Thanks for taking my call.
How you doing, pal?
Pretty good. I guess the NFL is in a bubble because it's business as usual. It's only keeping things kind of lonely, but it's crazy.
A little crazy. Everything's quarantined, but I mean, the free agency is always nuts. It's always fun to watch, you know, who's going where and who's signing where. And I love the legal tampering, how stupid that sounds, but it is what it is. They're going to tamper anyway, so let's call it legal tampering. And everyone has their deal all ready to go by March 18th, and then it just gets crazy.
Yeah, but the Eagles' draft, I know they need wide receivers. Here's a wide receiver I would like to see take. Maybe first round is too high. He's Michael Pittman Jr. from USC. And I was looking at his other, they were listing the top prospects from first round all the way down to 250. So it was crazy. I see DeAndre Swift from Georgia in the second round. How can he be a fall that low? He looks like a good running back. Would the Eagles take a flyer on him?
Do you need a running back at this point? Do you need a running
back? Not really.
You just let one go in Jordan Howard. You already had a legitimate NFL running back, and you let him go. I think they need wide receiver help. They need linebacker help, and they're not. They historically don't take linebackers early. And they need secondary help. They just help themselves with Darius Slay, but they need more help. They need more help. And the way they draft, does Howie Roseman give you confidence in the way he drafts?
Well, it's like 50-50 with him. But I wouldn't be surprised if they take Wide receiver in the first or second round. I mean, that would really give something for Wentz.
Which round?
First and second round.
You mean back-to-back wide receivers?
Back-to-back. I think that's their weakest position of the whole team, I think.
Well, they have Deshaun coming back. They're going to take one probably in the first round. They might have to move up. They might have to move up to take someone because...
I'm sorry.
That's okay. They're sitting it, and I appreciate the phone call, Mitch. I got to run. They're sitting at 21. The top three guys, who is it? Hugs, Jerry Jeudy, and the other cat, not Justin Jefferson. The other one, his name escapes me. The other kid from Alabama.
CeeDee Lamb.
Thank you. From Oklahoma. CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma. I think you would need to move up. Not much, but a little bit if you want to target those three. If not, if you're okay with Justin Jefferson, he's probably going to fall to 21, I would think. That's just what I think. If you want one of those three guys, go up and get them. If you think they're that big, they're that going to make that much of a difference. If they're that, you know, if their difference-making ability is palpable, go get them. Go get them. Go get your guy. Don't screw around. Go get your guy. But if you think Justin Jefferson's going to be fine, and he did, he had a tremendous run to the title game in the semifinal game. He had three touchdowns in the title game, including those two games. He had three touchdowns, wins the title with LSU. So maybe they'll sit tight. I don't know what they're going to do, but we got to get out of here. Dylan McKinnon, you're up next. Connor Thomas, I appreciate it, my friend. Great job, D-Line. I'm coming up next. I want to thank everyone for listening today, tweeting the show at Joe Stasek 975, Steve Callis, Marcus Hayes for coming on. I'm out. D-Line's up next. I will talk to you next week. Late.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.